If you're purchasing a new home or refinancing your existing home, then you need to call Team Hochberg, your trusted local lender, 855-563-2843, or visit 56diva.com. Lower.com, equal housing lender, MLS 112-4061.
Okay, Reggie, what do you say? We start podcast number 500. Woo-hoo! Well, look at the party they're throwing for us, huh? All right, my friend, we've done this. Well, you and I haven't done this 500 times, but I certainly have. But we've had a pretty good run. As long as you stick around here, you might get your 500 under your belt. I don't know when you do you remember when you even started? It's had to have been at least, I would say, I don't know, 5 years, 6 years, 7. Do you even remember? You probably didn't remember because I went through so many producers and engineers at the beginning. They were changing me all around. So I appreciate your loyalty. Well, let's do this thing. Let's put 500 in the bank. All right. Okay. Let's do this thing extra special. This is a big deal, right? At least that's what they tell me. All right, get ready. Star, smile, strong. Here we go. 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNRadio.com or wherever you go to find your favorite podcast. We are there. And don't forget, if you like what you hear, get out there and tell your friends, tell your family, tell anyone who listens to a podcast that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and it should be theirs too. Your loyalty and devotion are much appreciated. Of course, if you're old or new to the podcast, you can always go to WGNRadio.com and hear what we've been up to for the last, well, several years and several episodes, and I'll get to that pretty soon. Just go to WGNRadio.com, go to the podcast section, hit the prompt for this specific podcast, and there you will have reams and reams and stacks and queues, I guess, in the digital world of of podcasts for your listening pleasure. It's always a good idea, I believe, to listen to where we've been so you know where we're going. And I'll tell you where we're going right now. A very special podcast today, at least in number. We are going to episode 500. Woo-hoo! Yes, it's pandemonium here, folks. It's mayhem. Wow, as you can hear in the background. What a party we're having. What a special occasion. Oh, my goodness. For me? Oh, you shouldn't have. Oh, you didn't? Oh, okay. No, but anyway, yeah, this is the 500th podcast. And I remember when I reached 100, I thought that was a lot. When I reached 300, I thought that was a lot. 500, as I've said many times, we love numbers to commemorate numbers with either fives or zeros. Well, hey, this has both in them. And as we all know, the more zeros, the better. Especially in the money situation, but usually it's a good idea whenever there's more zeros at the end, and this one's got at least 2 and a 5. Episode 500. Wow. Well, you know, I did think long and hard about what to do for this 500th episode, and I've explained it a lot of times. These numbers are kind of arbitrary, and sometimes you can make a big deal about them, And I've a lot of times ascribed to the, as I've said, the Walter Payton view of things when you reach a certain level, especially of some kind of accomplishment or achievement. I'm certainly not downplaying it. I think the fact that I have 500 episodes now, well, I will in about another, what do we got here on the clock here? Well, at least in another 56 minutes, I'll have another podcast under my belt, number 500. But at least 56 minutes, you know me. But when you reach that, believe me, I'm not downplaying it or trying to minimize its significance at all. It's a pretty good number. And I also think that in May, as I celebrate 10 years, that's a pretty good number too. I think there's something to be said for longevity. I think there's something to be said for commitment and loyalty and persistence. And I think when you do something for 500 episodes, 500 weeks in a row, thank you very much, and almost 10 years, as I said, we'll celebrate that in May. Certainly, I believe that's it's something to celebrate and commemorate. But at the same time, I don't think it's necessary to throw a big blowout party because, and I'll explain that why, or make this some kind of a big deal with special guests or whatever. I really do subscribe to the Walter Payton view, and I've said it before, and so I'll explain it again for those of you who might have not heard it before, but I always admired Walter Payton for many reasons, but one thing I always admired him about is, especially in the late 70s and early 80s, when the whole touchdown celebration thing started to become a big deal, certainly as television became more of an impact on football, especially the NFL, and it helped raise its profile immensely. The players and probably their agents and other people just realized the power of television. As I said many times, we are a visual media. We are a visual animal. And so suddenly, when sports, especially in football and other sports, you know, you weren't supposed to bring attention to yourself. You're supposed to be about team, you know, teamwork, team. But as television became more of a marketing tool, and it became very obvious that then some players were building some kind of a reputation and an image, which during, because of their play, whether it was their play or their personality, but whatever got the attention of the camera and ultimately got the attention of the public, well, then, of course, marketers got involved and said, well, that guy's pretty popular. People like to watch him. Maybe he can help sell my shaving cream. Maybe he can help sell my beer. Maybe he can help sell my my razor blades. Maybe he can help sell my cologne. And so in the 70s and 80s, interestingly enough, as you mentioned some of the, as I mentioned some of those products, you realize they were all male oriented. And so the sports figures initially were associated marketing wise with male oriented products because it was assumed, and there's probably some research to back it up in those days, that mostly men watch sports. However, we certainly know in the last 40 or 50 years that women have become huge sports fans, knowledgeable sports fans. And so now athletes will advertise anything that appeals to both sexes. Doesn't matter. But my point is that, you know, it was, it became a marketing tool. And so whatever a player could do to stand out among the others, in addition to just their performance, certainly helped elevate their personality, help elevate their awareness. And in today's world helped, as they said, there's a name for it now, helped elevate their brand. It was always a brand. It's just we didn't give it a name for it back then. Now everything has a title. Everything has a name. So now you have your own brand, okay? And so, but what I loved about Walter Payton was in the days when that whole touchdown celebration was just beginning to take hold, as I said before, as television played a larger role in the popularity, in helping the popularity of the NFL, Walter Payton did not do dances and do these crazy things. Every so often he'd spike the ball, and that was kind of the ordinary way to celebrate a touchdown. You spike the ball. But all the dancing and all the choreography, especially today, that, you know, jumping into the stands and all that, that's a relatively newer phenomenon of the last, say, 30 to 25 years. But what I loved about Payton was, you know, he'd get a touchdown and he would just flip the ball to the ref. And so finally he would doing that. As I said, while a lot of his peers and contemporaries were doing all these dances, Peyton said, I'd rather just, you know, if you do a celebration, you're doing that because you don't think it's ever going to happen again. And when I get to the end zone, in my view, I'm coming back there. So no need to celebrate this time because I'll be back soon. That's part of the job, and that's just business as usual. And I always admired that about him, that he let his play on the field define him, not all this ancillary stuff. Many times there's some players that are much more popular, not because of their performance, but because of what they do in other ways to gain attention. But so I always respected Peyton for that. And so I look at it the same way. 500 episodes is certainly something to commemorate and appreciate. But at the same time, at the end of the day, I'm doing these podcasts to connect with you, to talk to you, to share with you, to connect with you. And the longer I do this, I'll hit 500 and maybe 600 and maybe 700 and who knows? And so, I certainly will commemorate 500, but I don't think there's any reason to do an end zone dance for 500. In fact, what I'd like to do is kind of just reflect on the whole 500 episodes in a way of sort of telling the story about it, as well as giving a little insight as to why I started doing a podcast. And now 500 episodes later, why I continue to do a podcast. And on a bigger, more perhaps reflective scale, I'd like to, any way I could, get your feedback to say, is this something that you find valuable, that you find interesting, that you find entertaining and informative, and it's become a regular routine of yours? Or is it, it's there? Because at the end of the day, hey, look, I love communicating with people. I love talking with people. As I said many times, I always did well in school, grade-wise, did very well. I had a very good GPA and the whole deal. But I always, especially in grammar school and in high school, you know, you get those little behavioral things at the bottom too. You'd get your grades, your alphabetic grades, your A's to F's. But then the bottom, there'd be this other little part of the report card, if you remember. And the only reason I really remember this is because not only do I remember reading it, but my mom saved all my report cards and I still have them. But there's always like behavioral things, like, you know, how does he, you know, whether it's a pleasure to have in class and blah, blah, blah. And I was not disruptive and I wasn't, you know, if anything negative, and I don't even know if this was a negative, but it would always say, you know, tends to talk too much, which is one reason why I decided to get into the media. As a young kid, I remember being 10 or 11, and I was consistently getting these, you know, likes to talk, you know, talks, you know, too much, or likes to talk and blah, blah, blah. And I said, well, and I was listening to the radio at an early age, and I said, well, it seems like this is something that I seem to be doing and don't even, without any effort. And I don't know whether that's good or bad, but it's certainly enough that somebody's paying attention to it, whether there's a red flag or not. And so maybe that's a field that I should pursue. And so here we are, many decades later, and I'm still talking. that's one reason why I do this. But another, you know, from a self kind of fulfilling way, I've always enjoyed talking to people and sharing and connecting And so that's one reason why I got into this. And it's one reason why I still enjoy doing this. And but at the same time, I've always kind of lived by the adage that, you know, I've never wanted to force myself on anybody or any people. You know, I'm flattered and happy when I'm welcomed in, or if when I'm engaging with somebody and they seem to be enjoying it and I'm enjoying their company. I think that's great. But look, we all know that there's some people that just don't like us. It doesn't really matter what we have done or not. They can just maybe look at us, you know, up and down and decide they don't like us or whatever. And I've never been one to force myself on people. I have one thing that I'm kind of proud of is that I've always been able to read a room pretty well, or read people. And, you know, I do have, obviously, a kind of a big personality, as I've said on this podcast many times. You can't do something like this, whether it be on the radio or television or a podcast, and not be a narcissist. I understand that. I own that. You have to. It takes incredible arrogance and, yes, confidence, but there's, you know, woven into arrogance, into confidence, is arrogance, is narcissism. It's there. I mean, it takes a pretty big or health. I don't know if you want to say healthy, but it certainly takes a big ego. It takes a lot of confidence. It takes a lot of arrogance to think that somebody wants to listen to what you say. Now, obviously, in today's world, a lot of things have changed, especially over the last 10 years, which I'm going to get into. There was a time when it was not easy to get on and communicate like this. There was many layers and many filters to filter out people, and the getting the opportunity to be on the radio and speak to people over a large, you know, wrath of people, if you will, that was not a simple task to get. That was not a privilege that was handed out, and it took a lot of work, and it took a lot of energy, and it took a lot of experience and hard work and persistence. Today, all you have to do is go out and buy a microphone and a digital tape recorder and plug it into your computer, and you got a podcast. Now, whether somebody listens or not, whether it's interesting or engaging, that's up to you, but at least you have the opportunity to do it. You know, 30 years ago, even to some extent 20 years ago, that really didn't exist like it does today. I mean, today, everybody either has a podcast or can have a podcast for sure. And what's unfortunate about it is that it's really become now another outgrowth, ultimately, of social media. And we already know the kind of downsides of social media. And podcasting used to be a little more pure than that. It used to be an interesting alternative to the broadcasting world. But now I believe it's become very diluted. And not surprisingly, it's become very celebrity dominated. And unfortunately, as I said before, the outgrowth of social media, it's also become very politically motivated. And where it used to be kind of this niche little interesting area, the podcasting world, that would offer some alternative, quote unquote, programming to the established broadcasting world. Now there's no lines. There are no lines. There are no differentiations. And the established broadcasting world, in fact, is, you know, is more imitative of the podcasting world, ironically. Once again, the establishment winds up, instead of the establishment being the leading force, the establishment ultimately turns into what was fighting against it. And so that's what's led to really the disintegration of the broadcasting medium. I don't know if you just saw this, but this is something huge. And I think I'm going to even talk about this in a future podcast coming up. But I don't know if you read, but the Academy Awards are going to leave broadcast television in 2029 and go to YouTube. Okay, that's huge. That's a major shift. That's a game changer. And if you've been listening to this podcast in any regularity over the last several years, you know that I sort of predicted this. You know, a few episodes ago, I was talking about it, admitting that yes, I was wrong, and you need to own that if you are wrong. But at the same time, I don't mind taking a bow when I'm right, and I'm going to take a bow on this one because I've been talking to you how I thought network television. 5 years ago, I predicted network television will be dead in many ways, and that's where it's going. And I used the Academy Awards as an example of one of the last vestiges of why people might even want to watch network television, aside from the Super Bowl. And we can see that even the NFL now, many games are already on streaming services. It may not be too long before NFL games or baseball games or basketball games, the major sports, move to the stream completely. That's not that far off. That is how far network television has fallen off the radar screen of the average American viewer, especially younger people. Older people are still going to watch television. But the Academy Awards in 2029, that's not that far away, in 4 years, will not be on ABC, where I believe it's been on for the last 50 years or so, since the 70s. It's going to be completely on, not even cable, but on a streaming service, on Netflix. And that's huge. And it just goes to show you how the entire media world, the entire world in general, we are just going through a lot of churn and a lot of change. And we might not get to a stability for the next 10 or 15 years. But for the Academy Awards to put a stake in the ground and say we are abandoning network television, the Academy Awards used to be one of the biggest viewed events of the year annually on television, period. And for them to say that we are not reaching our audience anymore on network television, wow. That shows you how the media and how our society in general is really going through a lot of changes. And so while the podcast world, certainly you can look at it on one side and say, wow, I mean, what an explosion. But at the same time, maybe I'm too traditional. Maybe I'm too purist. But there's a lot more fish in the sea now. And to me, that deludes it. And I enjoyed doing a podcast, don't get me wrong. But now, I mean, and the fact, if you're listening to me now, I have a greater appreciation for your loyalty than ever before. Because, I mean, now you can listen to anything. There's not just five, you know, possibilities. You can be listening to podcast there by your favorite celebrities. I mean, I'm not surprised that celebrities got into it. Hey, they are looking to elevate their brand, especially those that had fallen off the cool meter. They find a whole new career on the podcasts. But there's those of us who started podcasting for what it was. It was an extension of broadcasting. and it seemed like a natural medium. Now we've got celebrities. Yeah, there's still some kind of niche kinds of podcasts, you know, the true crime podcasts or mystery podcasts, but it was always kind of niche-y, but now I don't even know if there's a word to categorize many categories within a niche. I don't even know anymore. But it's become celebrity dominated, it's become politically dominated, and it really now is another extension of social media. Podcasts have really become another way or an extension of or even mimicking a Facebook post anymore, right? I mean, how is a podcast? It used to be like this podcast, purely audio. Now most podcasts are all video, which even shows you more that it's not what it has. You could say it's evolved. I could argue with it's devolved. But it certainly has changed a lot since I first started doing this in May of 2026. So or 2016. So on this commemoration of the 500th episode, I'd like to give you a little background into and a little behind the scenes thing as to how this all started and how I got, and I'm not going to say I rather say how we got to episode 500, because that's the way I feel about it. And I will talk about that at the very end, but that's another reason. You know, I've told you before, I feel very uneasy about birthdays. I always feel like, I celebrate my birthday, don't get me wrong, and it's a nice day, but I've always felt odd about, you know, being celebrated for being born. Because in my view, I didn't do anything. I did what comes naturally, you know. And I didn't pick the date. January 8th wasn't my choice. It was based on, I guess, my mom's contractions in my mom's body. Could have been the 9th, could have been the 7th, could have been the 3rd, could have been the 15th of January. I didn't do anything. I got pushed out, in fact. It was up to me. I probably would have stayed in there a little longer. 9 months was fine, but, you know, it's probably pretty comfortable in there. I get it. I think it's nice. I think it's appreciative. But I've always said I think birthdays are for the parents, because that was the biggest day in their lives, the day that a child is born, at least it should be. And I feel the same way about this. It's very cool to say, wow, you've done 500 episodes. The fact that WGN Radio has allowed me to be on their website and do this for 500 episodes, almost 10 years, I'm very appreciative of that. I would assume that they approve of what I'm doing. They haven't taken me off. but at the same time, I feel more like this is something that I am celebrating more that you have been supporting this and that you have been the major reason why I've done this. I say that with all sincerity. When I started doing this podcast in May of 2016, I'll give you a little background. As most of you or many of you may know, but some might not, depending on when you hopped aboard, you might not know my history, but from 2009 to 2014, I was a part of the Gary Meyer Show on WGN Radio in the afternoon drive. It was a very highly rated, popular show, and we had a really good audience, a loyal audience, a very enthusiastic audience. It was a great time. And it was one of the highlights, not only of my career, but of my life, because I got a chance to work with one of my radio influences and idols to begin with, one of the people who was actually responsible for influencing me to want to get into radio, listening to Steve Dahl and Gary Meyer from literally almost their first day together as a teenager. And so it was a great experience. And I still look back on that show and those almost 5 or 6 years as really just a great time. And it helped. It validated. You know, it was like a dream come true. I always wanted to be on the radio in Chicago. And then I got a third part of that, working with somebody who was one of my influences. So, wow, being on the radio in my hometown and working with somebody who I greatly admired and listened to as a young kid and learned from. So, wow, that's talk about a triple crown. I'm disappointed that it didn't last longer. I think it should have. I think that show should still be on today. And I think we would be as more popular than ever. It was unfairly taken off or misguidingly taken off. And I don't think it ever should have been. It was really hitting its stride. And it's a shame. But, you know, you can't change history and you can't make decisions that other people make. So when we were taken off the air in 2014, finally, which was, like I said, I think a very short-sighted decision. I was off the radio for about a year. And then in 2015, around October, I got a call from WGN asking if I would be interested in filling in on the station for a couple of shows. And I said, my gosh, certainly. I mean, you know, when I thought about being in a radio, I never thought about, you know, I thought about being on my own anyway. I mean, I think I certainly was influenced by partners, and I would have loved to have had a partner, and I enjoyed working with Gary, don't get me wrong. But at the same time, I mean, I was hoping that I also had the ability and talent to host my own program. And so here I was given this opportunity, I would think, based on the performance that I had shown and the ability I may have shown with working with Gary to fill in on my own. I built something of a group of listeners who enjoyed listening to me, and I guess you could call it a fan base, whatever you want to call it. And so I was very excited to do that. And I was doing fill-ins at all different times, overnights, in the evenings, on weekends, during the day parts as well. And so it was a very exciting kind of time for me to be once again back on the radio on WGN, major radio station in Chicago, obviously, and then given the opportunity to do this on my own. And so really, the podcast was an outgrowth of that. I pitched doing a podcast, which WGN had just begun at that time in 2016 to really begin to offer podcasts on their website. And I mean, once again, it was viewed as an extension. It was viewed as a companion to radio. I mean, now podcasts and radio, they're competitors. And really, in many ways, certainly in terms of buzz, podcasts are, I mean, the Golden Globes have just added a new category for best podcast. Okay, now, not surprisingly, it's all celebrities. But my point is, I mean, wow, talk about how far the podcast has come in the last 10 or 15 years. I mean, you know, the Golden Globes are kind of a more showy thing, but the fact that they would even consider adding podcasts to the Golden Globes, which honor films and television, but podcasts too. Wow, that has upped the ante for the podcasting world in general. As I said, now podcasts are competition for terrestrial radio. But back, 10 years ago when I started, podcasts were viewed as a complement, or as I said before, an alternative, but not a serious competitor, certainly not a serious threat. The way I viewed a podcast at that time, because not everybody in the world had one, was A, not only did it keep my awareness there, my name out there in the market, in the public, in people's ears, hopefully in the station's management or maybe management of other stations or whatever, but I wanted to keep my name out there and keep my brand out there, if you will, and I also wanted to make sure that I kept my skills sharp. People think that you just turn on a microphone and talk. Now, sadly, many podcasts that are out there are done by amateurs. As I said before, anybody could just buy a microphone and plug it into your computer and say, I've got a podcast. But I still believe there's a talent in communicating, in storytelling, in making, having opinions, but being able to debate them and convey them in a way that makes people think, whether they either disagree or agree, that's up to them. But at least an effective communicator makes someone think or informs or engages. And I like to think that I hopefully have that skill. I've been trying to hone it for 3.5, almost 4 decades now. And really, going back, as I said before, the first time I was on a real radio station, a real radio station, was in 1980. And I was on WLUP. 97.9, at that time, one of the hippest and coolest stations there ever was, especially here in Chicago. In fact, it's being celebrated at the Museum of Broadcast Communications right now. And that was the first time, and I was a teenager. And the reason I got on, and I hosted my own show for an hour, on the Loop, in 1980, at the peak of the Loop's time. And the way I did it was, there was a contest that was on once a week on Sunday nights called the Chicago Star. And the whole idea was, it was really the beginning. It was 40 years ahead, 50 years ahead of its time, 40 years ahead of its time, of allowing listeners to host their own shows for an hour on the Loop. And so you wrote in a letter as to why you wanted to host your show and what kind of music you would play, and the whole, because the Loop was a music station primarily at that time. And you explained why you wanted to be the Chicago Star. And so, as I said before, as an early teen, and even before that, I realized that this was something that I could be good at. And I enjoyed talking. I kept getting in trouble for it in school. And so I didn't know. Could I do it? Would I want to do it? The best times to decide what you want to do is early in your life to get an idea. Well, that looks cool, but let me see what it really entails. When you're looking at the window, you're looking at something through the window, looks a lot more glamorous than when you get on the other side of that glass. And, you look behind the paint, and sometimes it's not all cracked up to be. I've certainly learned that through my life and my career. And so as a teenager, I said, well, this is a great opportunity for me. I can try my hand at this. Do I like this or not? Can I do this or not? I still have a lot of confidence in my abilities. And so I felt, even as a teenager, yeah, I can do this. So I wrote in a letter why I wanted to be the Chicago Star. And a month or so later, I remember I was playing baseball It was on a Saturday, and we had a doubleheader that day, and I got home, and my mom says, you got a phone call from WLUP. And I said, what? She said, did you write some letter? And I said, yeah. She said, well, they want you to go on down to the radio station next Saturday and be on the radio. And I was like, what? And so sure enough, I did it. And I think it was 1981 now that I think about it. I'm sorry. Yeah, it was 1981. And so I went down, and I went down with my mom. I couldn't even, I didn't know where I was going or everything. It was out on, the John Hancock building. That's where the Loop was. And I went down there, and I went down there with my mom, and I talked to Matt Bisbee, who was the production guy over at the Loop at the time, and he was kind of running this little contest or feature or segment, whatever you want to call it. So I went down there. I spoke to him on the phone, and he said, well, make up a list of how many songs. He said maybe pick 15 songs or something you want, and then we'll come here, and you'll host your own show. Wow. So I went down to the John Hancock building, went into the Loop radio station, walked into the studio, and sat down in the chair with the big mic, and I had a guy helping me, like an intern or somebody. I remember his name today. His name was Don Dockman. I don't even know where he's at or what he's doing, but he was an intern there, and he helped me sort of be my producer that day. And so I picked the songs out, and I still have the tape. And I was a Chicago star, and it aired, I believe, it was Easter Sunday, 1981. Yeah, now I forgot. It wasn't... It wasn't 1980. It was 1981. And wow. What a thrill. What a thrill. And I remember sitting behind that mic, and when he gave me the cue, it felt so natural. It was exciting, it was fun, but it was natural. I wasn't nervous one bit. And if, in fact, as I continued to do it, I got more comfortable, and I started to talk, tell a few little stories and little anecdotes, a little information about each song, and I was introducing the songs. I was actually hitting the posts, and right before the lyrics start, I was talking over the music, and the producer even said, "Wow, have you ever done this before? You're really good at this." I was 17. I never did it before in my life. And that really kind of cinched my suspicions to say, this is something that I think I had a great time doing it. It felt so comfortable and so natural. And I said, well, I certainly want to pursue this again. I mean, I did it once, but let me see if I can do it again. And so that's why I went to college and was on the college radio station. But my first taste of what I'm doing right now was on WLUP, a major Chicago station, when I was just 17 years old. And here I am, many decades later, still doing it. Not talking to as many people as I was probably that day, but so this goes way back, folks. But the reason in 2016 why I wanted to do a podcast, because as I said before, it was my goal ultimately. I never thought I'd be doing this podcast for 10 years. I never thought I'd be doing this podcast for 500 episodes. Because in reality, what I was looking to do with this podcast, because podcasting at that time was not this major, social media force like it is today. In fact, social media wasn't even the social media force it was back then. And so I was really using the podcast as a way, as I said before, to sharpen my skills, to keep my name out there, because I'd be doing this on a weekly basis, so at least my name would be out there, and to hopefully show the management, as I said before, not only at WGN but at other stations, of what I could do on my own. And so the goal really was to use the podcast to get back on the radio on a regular, full-time, daily basis. It wasn't just to have a podcast, to be a pure podcaster. I view the podcast as being a means to an end, to get me, as almost like a weekly audition tape, to get me back on the radio where I was before for the last 5 years or so as a full-time job. That was my goal. And in many cases, I guess it's still my goal. I don't know if that's a goal that is no longer possible, but that's a whole other story. But that's the way I started this. That's why I started it. And so when my podcast began, the first episodes, still an hour, but the way it was, the structure was very much like a mini radio show. Most radio talk shows are between 3 and 4 hours. I only had an hour, so obviously it was condensed. So I would usually have a segment of a 15, I would have guests, I would have segments, I would talk about various topics like a mini radio show. Because in my mind, that's what I was trying to show. I was trying to show what I could do, how diverse my interests were. I could talk about a variety of different subjects within one show, whether it was sports or politics or current events or music or movies or whatever it is, whatever's going on, I could talk about it. I have an opinion and I can convey that opinion, I hope, in an entertaining and informative way. At least that was my goal. And so that's how I started it. So it was very much kind of a mini radio show. Most podcasts were about one topic or, as I said before, kind of niche things. Today, basically, podcasts are just extended interviews. I mean, that's all they are. They're personality driven. But most podcasts are just, in my view, they're just kind of like, they've just become very, very formulatic. It's the celebrity ones, they talk and then they bring on another one, a friend of theirs who's a celebrity, and they interview them, and everybody's just interviewing everybody else, and everybody's on everybody else's podcast, and there's not really anything all that interesting or new. It's just a lot of people talking to each other, basically friends, and it's done in a very casual, kind of boring way, in my view. It's there is an art, there is a craft to communicating in an effective way, whether it's the way you speak, how you speak, the way you formulate your opinions or your arguments, whatever you want to call them. The grammar that you say, do you have verbal acne? Do you say, you know what I mean, or like, or oh my God all the time? Or right? Oh, that one's driving me crazy now. How many times do people say something and after it they say right? Some people say right 10 times and it's like their version of like. I mean, young people say like all the time, especially young girls. But most people now, if you watch any media show or listen to podcasts, people will be saying, well, the president, blah, 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 right? It's almost like some weird need for an affirmation. I don't get it, but it's really, for someone who kind of, this is what you do, and I've been studying this and practicing it for many years, when I hear that kind of verbal acne, I call it, it drives me crazy. And there's a lot of that out there. You won't hear me doing that very often. There is a way to do this well. There is a way to do this correctly, to sound good, to sound grammatically correct, and as well as to engage. Today, as I said before, most people just click on a microphone and just talk. But that's becoming accepted now. As the world has become dominated by TikTok and everything, well, what we see is what we get, and what we see is what we expect or accept. And so, sadly, the craft of communication, the art of broadcasting, sadly has been diluted, and the standard is much lower now. And once again, that's just an outgrowth of social media, and it's pretty much now a reality of our culture, whether I like it or not. But as I said, so that's why I really got into doing a podcast back in May of 2016. And so, in fact, I used to have a regular group of contributors who would help me and be a part of the show with different segments. I usually would start out with a guest, or I would talk about a specific topic for the first 15 or 20 minutes of the podcast, and I would have either a regular contributor or a guest on the other half, once again, to show my ability to kind of be versatile in talking about a lot of different subjects and sounding interesting and informative and engaging, so that I could ultimately get myself back on the radio full time. Now, sadly, that didn't work, but that was the goal. And so I used to have regular contributors. And so as I commemorate this 500th episode, I certainly would like to thank some of my early contributors to the podcast. Mick Kaler, who you may have heard I speak to frequently, even when I do some fill-ins on WGN Radio. Mick and I go back to our college days at Elmhurst College, 88.7 FM, WRSE. We met in college, and we did radio together, as well as other kind of radio-oriented projects together. We hosted radio dances all throughout the western suburbs. We didn't do radio shows together per se, but we were involved. We used to actually put out from the radio station, we put out a monthly newsletter called the Huckabuck Update, which is a connection as to why we first met, because Mick and I were both and are both big Honeymooners fans. And on my college radio show, within the first month or so, I played the song called The Hucklebuck. And if you're a Honeymooner fan, you know The Hucklebuck, which is one of the classic episodes of Young at Heart, when Ralph asks Alice to go to a sock hop and the dance and the Tunnel of Love and the roller skating, and he wants to be all cool and hip, and he wants to learn the latest dances. And so Norton brings down a record player with this song in the 50s called The Hucklebuck. And it was a dance. Here's a dance you should know. When the lights are down low, when you do the hucklebuck, do the hucklebuck. All you got to do, but boy, you're out of luck. Do something with your sacroiliac. Swivel like a snake, waddle like a duck. Anyway, I played that song on my show, and Mick was listening to my radio show and called me up and said, "Is that the song from the Honeymooners?" And we bonded ever since, and Mick and I are still friends today. And so Mick was an early contributor to my podcast. Many of you will remember Emily Arminetti, who was on for several years. And things then with Emily sadly kind of broke down when COVID hit, because it was such a difficult time, and you know, her kids were home from school, and so she didn't really have the time to do it. And then when we came back after COVID, you know, things were a little more complicated, and so Emily wasn't able to join us anymore. But Emily was on for several years, at least 2 or 3 years on a regular basis. In fact, for a while, you know, she was on every week. And I knew Emily from my public relations days. She was in my group. I was a public relations executive, and I headed up a group. And Emily was one of the people that worked for me and worked with me. And she was just really, we had an instant chemistry together. We liked one another, and we were way into pop culture. And so that's why I had her always coming on every week or so, or every couple of weeks, or maybe every show, to talk about something that was going on in the pop culture world. People, some of you may remember from the early days, I had my godson on, Patrick Minogue, and he was, we would do a segment called The Millennial Meter. Do you remember that? You know, about 9, 8 years ago, millennials have lost their prestige to some extent to Gen X and Gen Z. But, you know, back in the early teens of this century, millennials ruled, man. They really lost their stride when, I think, when COVID hit, because everything changed. And millennials were like way in charge. And so that was the point. You know, he's a millennial. And the interesting is he just turned 40 years old. but I had him on, 10, 15 years ago. Well, 10 years ago, to help me. I'm on the little limbo period of being a baby boomer, which is ridiculous, and a Gen Xer. To what was cool with millennials, because they had a whole new set of rules back then. Now it's, like I said, Gen Y and Gen Z. We care about what they care about. Well, I don't know if I do so much, but the culture does. And so I had Patrick come on to talk about, I would ask him, well, here's what I do. Now, where does that fall on the millennial meter? Am I cool or am I in or out? And I always had fun with that for a while. And then Patrick wasn't able to do it on a regular basis anymore. I also early on talked about sports with a former sports guy from who's been on The Score here in Chicago, as well as an announcer for many sports teams, Mark Vasco. And I used to have him on every so often to talk about sports. So as I said, I tried to make things like a radio show, different segments that you'd have on a regular basis, whether it was pop culture, whether it was sports, whether it was this millennial meter, with guests about different topics, talking about topics on my own and my own opinion, and creating this mini radio show. And that's really was the genesis of the podcast. And it went on that way, for quite a few years, but it really was then, COVID really kind of changed the rules, because then it was more difficult to get into the studio. I mean, I record this now, but back then I had to get studio time. And so then it was weird. I had to record it from home for a while. We had to record it over Skype. It became a lot more technically, and so that's when it kind of naturally, organically, it wasn't by design. It was more by necessity. It wasn't really even, now that I think about it, it wasn't really organic. It was more by necessity that I sort of had to do this on my own for a while, because, during COVID for those 2 years, 2.5 years, we were all kind of isolated, and that meant the podcast too. So I had to record these from home and send the files in, because, it wasn't always good to go into the studio and blah, blah, blah. And that, as I said, that had implications for Emily not, joining me as regularly as she could during that period and things like that. And so it really then evolved into what the podcast is today. And it went from being a mini radio show with many different segments and to more of, in my view, a conversation between me and you. And to be honest with you, while I enjoy the diversity of the segments and the guests and thing like that, what I hope is that the format that we've been following perhaps for the last 5 years of me kind of just talking about a subject on its own for an hour or so is perhaps or hopefully that it's more of a conversation. It's sort of getting back to my roots in many ways of why I first wanted to do this, because I enjoy connecting and sharing and talking with people. And those other formats, those were the ways that you were allowed, if you will, to do that. But podcasting does provide one thing that commercial radio doesn't, and that is unlimited freedom to some extent. But you don't have to worry about commercials. You don't have to worry about breaks. You just have to be interesting, be engaging. And that's, I believe, a lot tougher to do. I think what I'm doing today takes more talent and more ability than the way I used to try to do it as a radio show, because I could depend on other people to fill that hour. I always think that radio shows that are filled with a lot of guests all the time, and there's always something going on every 15 minutes, I don't know if that host really has anything to say, because they're letting other people, they're having other people say it. They might engage with them, but I think you rely a lot of times on guests if you don't have a point of view, if you don't have something interesting to tell, if you're not a good storyteller. I take pride in the fact that I've been able to do this for 10 years and say the last five in this kind of long form format, where I've just picking a topic and talking to you about it, telling you a story, sharing with you about either things personally that's happened to me or my views on bigger subjects or little quirky things about myself. I've tried to be very honest and very forthcoming, and I've tried to make friends with you. As I've said many times, I'm talking to you. I'm in your ear right now. But the you is split, because when I say you, yeah, I'm talking to you right now. But the you, I hope, are several thousand people, many thousand people. I don't know the number, to be honest with you. But my goal is to be both a broadcaster and a personal caster, if you will. My goal is for this podcast to sound like I'm talking to you. It's just that you could be an individual or several thousand or several hundred thousand. I really don't know the number. I'm being honest about that. But I'm trying to connect on a one-on-one basis. And if that connection hits on a one-on-one basis, then hopefully there's a lot of ones out there. But that's really my goal at this point, is to, you know, is to share with you. And I'm trying to offer something that is an alternative to all the other podcasts out there, because now everybody has a podcast. And as I said before, everybody's just getting guests, everybody with guests. Okay, I can go that route, but what are we going to talk? Am I getting the same guests everybody else gets? So, in my view, to be intriguing, to be interesting, to be different, to offer something unique, I guess what I'm trying to say is we're all unique, each one of us. We all have our own uniqueness. So that's what I'm trying to offer to you. I'm trying to offer you my uniqueness. Now, whether you find it interesting or entertaining or informative, well, that's up to you. You can either listen and never listen again, or you can listen every week. But I guess that's my niche at this point, because I'm looking around at everybody else with podcasts, and they're either talking about the most mundane things in a very uncommunicative way, which, as I said before, in my view, is becoming the standard, unfortunately. Or what I try to do is take my skills, take the experience that I've had, take my natural abilities, take my learned abilities, and use those to find interesting ways to tell stories, to share stories, to share opinions, to learn, to enlighten, to be right or to be, like I said in the last couple of podcasts, to be wrong, but to be engaging. You can hate me or love me, but I hope you listen to me. That's my goal. And so I'm really enjoying doing this on a weekly basis like this, because the medium itself of podcasting offers me that freedom, offers me that liberated, that liberation, if you will, to be able to have this kind of a conversation for an hour or so, not worrying about time, not worrying about breaks, not worrying about anything else except the topic at hand, and trying to convey it in an interesting, entertaining, hopefully at times funny, quirky, taking the building blocks that I had, perhaps when you may have listened to me initially on the radio with Gary Meyer, or perhaps you discovered me now on my own here. But what I've tried to do is put myself out there and to create ultimately a connection and a relationship with you individually. I hope there's a lot of individuals out there. But when you turn on this podcast, I hope that I'm able to communicate to you like I'm talking just to you, that you can almost see me making eye contact with you. That's my goal, to be that intimate, to be that effective, that you're engaged and compelled to keep listening. Because look, I know I can ramble on here, and but to me, I think it takes a little ability with his, you know, being as, if I can be a little, humble here or not humble. I mean, I'm talking to you guys for like an hour without anyone else in the room. I don't have any other guests to fill the time. I don't have any other, but I'm not playing music. I'm filling that hour with just you and me. I'm talking and you're listening, and hopefully you're reacting, whether it's positive or negative, whether you're smiling or frowning, whether you're laughing or shaking your head in disagreement. But hopefully, in the way that I present these topics, whatever they are, whether they're personal, whether they're big, whether they're newsworthy, whether they're current events, whether they're goofy things that happen to me, whether they're little anecdotes about when I have to call the man, whatever it may be, I hope I'm doing it in an engaging way that makes you want to come back next week to talk again with me. And that's the goal. So as I look back at the 500 episodes, I'm not taking a bow for those 500 episodes. In fact, as far as I'm concerned, this 500 commemoration of the 500th episode today is not for me or about me. It's really for you. For you. Because without you, I would never have reached 500 episodes. You've made it possible by your devotion and your support and you coming back every week to listen to what I want to talk about. And I don't know if you listen every week. I don't know if you listen for 10 minutes and turn it off. I don't know. But you have made this possible. I'd be saying this to somebody else. I'd be talking, my wife would probably be going out of her mind, but you should be celebrated. You should be thanked, not me, for these 500 episodes. And so I say this sincerely. as I wind down this episode. I didn't fill this 500 episode with people saying how great I am or having special guests or everything like that. It's not what this is about. I look at this 500 episode as I just got into the end zone for the 500th time. And like I've done every week, I'm just flipping the ball to the ref because I expect to be back again. Getting to that end zone, that's my job. But who I have to thank is you. And so I think we both, if you're a regular listener, if you've been a listener for 10 years or 5 years or 2 years or 2 months, I thank you and I celebrate this 500th episode with you, because of you. And I guess I'd love to hit some feedback from you. I have a Facebook page, and you can certainly write on there. But as I reflect now, after 500 episodes and 10 years almost in May, I guess what I'd love to hear from you in some way, I've been lucky enough to meet some of you in person, and you've been very complimentary and very, supportive of the podcast, and I really appreciate it. But I guess my question is, after 500 episodes, how am I doing? Do you think that I should continue to do this? Are you enjoying it? Have I still have interesting things to talk about? Because, as I said to you earlier, I don't want to force myself on anybody. And if I'm not doing the job, if I'm not engaging, if I'm not addictive to you, if I'm not in your daily routine, if you think, well, it was interesting for a while, but I've lost interest, I don't want to force myself on anybody. I only want to do this if I'm providing something of value. If I'm providing something that you think is entertaining and informative and you'd like to continue to hear. As I said before, I enjoy doing this for myself. I'm getting something out of this, but I'm more interested in if you're getting something out of it. And so I'd love to get your feedback, and I'd love your honesty. And please tell me, if you're having a great time listening to this podcast and you'd love to have it continue, I'd love to hear that. But if you say, you know, Jim, I have to be honest with you, I haven't listened to you, or I don't listen as much and I don't like when you do this, I'd love to hear that too. Because it would help me, if I continue to do this, to, okay, figure out what I'm doing right or what I'm doing wrong. Or, as I said before, not to sound, too heavy, but should I still be doing it? I think after 500 episodes and after almost 10 years, I think it's legitimate to take a step back and wonder if you should still continue. And the only person who can really provide me that answer is you. And so I hope that you'll take a little time and think and put down something thoughtful that you really believe, whether it's positive or negative. Because as I said before, I do this podcast for myself. Don't get me wrong. I enjoy doing it. But ultimately, I do it for you. You know, I do a lot of acting in Chicago. And I'm always more interested in making sure that the audience gets it. I'm not worried. Certainly I'm up there for my own gratification and fulfillment and my enjoyment of using my talent, but I really want to make sure that the audience is having a good time. I'm always audience-centric. This is not just an ego thing for me. I really enjoy entertaining and sharing and connecting and informing. That's why I got in the media business in the beginning. And so as I reflect on 500 episodes. I've been, I can't think about anything I haven't talked about or tried to share with you. Whether it's, as I said before, big topics, pop culture topics, sports topics, human topics, goofy things that have happened to me, goofy things I've thought about. I try to reflect who I am and what I am on a weekly basis. And hopefully you find that interesting and you want to come back. And so on this 500th episode, more than me taking a bow, I'd like for you to take a bow. And I say thank you for 500 episodes. And so ends another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNRadio.com or wherever you go to find your favorite podcast, we are there. And don't forget to tell your friends, share family, tell anyone who listens to a podcast that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and it should be theirs too. Your loyalty and devotion are much appreciated. Hope you enjoyed episode number 500. I'm Jim Tirano. I ain't here on business. I'm only here for fun. You've been listening to Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, from the end of my mind to your ears.